Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Sean Duffy, 20 years of combination experience, backstep firefighter for Ann Arbor Fire Department on Engine 4, co-founder of Build Your Culture LLC, one half of Make Do Suburban Firemen Podcast, published author, national speaker who has instructed all over the country, including internationally, and in my opinion, a subject matter expert when it comes to search on the fire ground. Sean is humble, yet very passionate about the fire service in all aspects of the job, and isn't afraid to let you know that. I hope the listeners can enjoy the message and tune in on the little nuggets and gems being dropped along the way. With that, I present Mr. Sean Duffy.
My name is Sean Duffy. I've been a fireman for almost 20 years. It'll be 20 years next month. I got started in the fire service. It was actually my parents. Both of them were EMTs for our local volunteer EMS. And so that's kind of what I knew growing up. And my mom went to go on to drive school buses as we got older and school age. And my dad stood as an EMT working for the city of Trenton in New Jersey, where I was born. And so, you know, going to see him and then obviously him taking me to see his friends at the firehouse and stuff like that is just kind of something I always figured I wanted to do. So right after high school, I was 18 and I was supposed to be an electrician. So I decided that probably wasn't the route I wanted to go. And I wanted to see if the fire service was for me. So I went down to our local volunteer firehouse. I put in an application and I started pulling shifts there and went through all my training and everything I needed to do and just fell in love with it. I was calling out of work to volunteer. So it was obvious to me at that point that, like, hey, if I'm willing to lose money to be here because this is what I really want to do, then I should probably pursue this. So, you know, just did all the things I was supposed to do, paramedic school, all that stuff. Wound up getting a degree in fire sciences and, you know, just as your show, right, just continue to be the student of the game as much as possible and pass on my failures and my successes along the way. And it's been a great ride. So,
okay. I did not know you're originally from Jersey. That's awesome. Yeah. You're a northerner like me. So it's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Yep.
So with that being said, when did you decide or what department did you choose when you're like, I think I want to do this for a career?
Well, it was weird, man. I had like kind of like an untraditional path, I guess some would say. Back then, you could, at the volunteer firehouse, they had a county paramedic that was put on the engines to make it an ALS engine that ran 24/7. And with that, they would pay you like less than minimum wage to be there Monday through Friday. So that was really my first introduction is that was Hillsborough County, Florida. And I did that for probably like 2 years. And I wound up moving to Sumter County and going that route. And they were at that time, like a combination, you know, they had some full-time, it was mainly paid on call. I just went there, started making money. My first introduction to actually branching out that was still in Sumter County. I stood there from, gosh, I started there in like 2009. And I worked there all the way till 2014 when I moved up to Michigan. So, you know, it was fun because you got to experience life as like paid on call, you know, maybe showing up as like one person taking the engine to this fire because nobody else was available to the part-time, you know, rank and then transitioning into a full-time firefighter with them. So, yeah, that's where I got most of my career experience so far.
Okay.
I shouldn't say so far, but you know what I mean.
Right. Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. With that being said, as long as you're comfortable with it, you know, it's a thing that happens in today's fire service, and I get it. You know, you have individuals that will join a department, and you know, the department will either not meet their expectations, or something in life happens that they have to move. If you're comfortable talking about it, what was your reasoning to transition from Florida back over to Michigan?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll talk about it to anybody who wants to listen. I'm not afraid to talk about it. Like I said, untraditional, so maybe something I say helps somebody out. I don't know. But that time period, I met my wife, and she's from Michigan. So ironically enough, like I was playing hockey down in Florida, like a lot. And she was bartending at the restaurant that was inside the hockey rink. And, we got to talking and everything else, and right before we met, she was actually getting ready to move to Michigan. So she kind of put the brakes on that, and our relationship evolved, and one day she's like, I really miss home, and all I really knew is like moving from New Jersey at 11 years old, like Florida was it up until this point for me, so I said, yeah, I could use a change, be good. I knew absolutely nothing about Michigan or the fire service in Michigan, right? So that was a huge awakening moment for me when I left my career department to come here with pretty much zero plan. So I took a job doing EMS in Detroit, and not working for the city, but just that doing backflow 911 because they were so slammed. So it took a lot. To get back into the fire service, I realized real quick, like, hey, you got to be a paramedic, and then the first job I took, I was gonna get laid off like 4 months later. So it was pretty awesome experience.
Damn.
So yeah, it's been a interesting ride, so that's what took me here. And just kind of on the side topic, we didn't stay here. I think we were here for a couple years, and I told Caitlin, I was like, listen, the fire service is just so unstable here. I'm not really making any money. I need to go back to Florida and put into the pension there, because like now that we have a family, I had two daughters at this time. I'm like, I got to start thinking about the future. So we did that, and it just happened to be that her mom got real sick, and we wound up moving back here to take care of her before she passed away. So a little bit of bouncing back and forth. I don't regret any of it. All good experiences, all kind of help shape my thought process. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at today.
How did Ann Arbor show up on your radar?
Oh man. That was interesting. So when we moved up here a second time to take care of my mother-in-law, I didn't care where I worked. I really didn't. I was just in the mindset now of like, you know what, family first. If I get a job in this department and it's for me, then I'll stay. If not, then that's okay too. But the most important thing was to take care of my family. So I wound up taking a job for the city of Wyandotte, which is just, it's like 10 miles outside of Detroit. And it was good. I worked with a bunch of great people, and it just happened to be that my fire chief now, Chief Kennedy, called me to actually do a search program for the department. We spoke on the phone, we set it all up, and then as we were talking, the idea was like, why don't you just come work here? And so I thought about it and talked to Caitlin and everything, and I was like, you know what, I had applied there years ago when we first moved here. I feel like it's worth revisiting. And so I did, and here we are today.
Okay. Before I even ask that question, I'm going to ask this question. I always ask the guests because sometimes they don't know, including myself. Can you tell us a little bit about Ann Arbor, the size, how many stations, personnel?
So we're growing just like anywhere else. We continue to hire about twice a year. As far as the size, about 27 square miles, we operate out of five firehouses. So we have three engine companies, two ladder companies, which are essentially quints. Given the way they are, like we just can't operate as a true truck company at this moment. So
Right.
You know, we have that. We just recently got BLS ambulance. That was some that was in the works before I started working there. But we put on duty every day. You know, we shoot for 18. That's our daily minimum. Sometimes, you know, if the stars align and everybody's there, we don't really have people off. We'll upgrade to four people per unit, depending on who's there, you know. So it's pretty cool. It's nice, you know, working in the college town. There's obviously unique challenges that come with that. But I mean, on game days or like when college is in session and stuff like, I mean, you can have over 300,000 people in the city, you know, or you're probably, and this is just a rough estimate, but like daily, we're probably well over 120,000 in the city just throughout the day. You know, on a normal day without anything real serious going on. So, you know, the population is there and we're continuing to expand vertically. So a lot of mid-rises and stuff like that, a lot of row homes, townhomes going in, things like that too. So it's a good place to work. It, I personally feel not everybody shares that same view as me, but I personally feel that there's a good dynamic there. You know, you could go to a ranch style house that's on fire, or you can go to, you know, multi-story residential. You know, there's really just there's a lot that you could run into. So as far as skills wise, I think that's a good thing, right? Like, because we have to not just train on single story, you know, two story. We have to train on everything, you know. So there's a lot of good opportunities there.
Okay. And what's your minimum staffing on the engines and the quints?
That's going to be three. Yeah, we will
Three.
never go above below three. You know, we'll hire overtime if it looks like we don't have enough personnel or something like that. But three is our absolute like bare minimum.
Okay. One of the questions I wanted to ask before that, because I felt like that was an appropriate question, like to talk about Ann Arbor. You mentioned the current chief of Ann Arbor called you regarding search. So my question to you is, where did your passion on search come from? What, because to me, there's always something that either happens or you get a notion or you notice like this could be done better. So how did your passion of search come about?
I don't know that it was one like particular circumstance that did it. I think it was an accumulation of multiple different experiences. To put it as eloquently as I can, or delicate, I should say. I'll put it this way. I got tired of going to fires and having the mindset of fire attack, fire attack, fire attack, and like search was just like way an afterthought. Like it just was kind of like, well, we put the fire out, now we'll search. And you know, that's what I knew for such a long time. And I just started going to these fires and like thinking to myself, like, man, if somebody was in there, like this could have been problematic. But then we started getting people, like pulling people out, you know, and that's what really started to bug me was like, hey man, like it's 12, 15 minutes into this thing. And, you know, now we're finding these people. You know, could this outcome have been different if we would have got search sooner? And I didn't really have anything to go off of other than my own frustration, right? So much like most of us do, we try to validate our feelings, right? Somehow. So I started searching, like scouring the internet, like if there's got to be something, there's got to be a study, there's got to be something that I could use to help me like push this forward, because at this point people were like, yeah, Sean, whatever, like shut up. You know, so I found Firefighter Rescue Survey, which was instrumental, you know, in looking through that. And I just started picking through that and seeing like, well, what does that mean? How does this look for me and like my experiences so far? And I just started putting together a program really, like, and it was based off of my passion for search, because that was something that I always felt was part of us, like as a fire service, was like, hey, yeah, like we go in and we pull people out. That's what we do. So understanding that like search is the mission, right? Like that's the objective, not a task. I was like just being pretty vocal, to be honest. And then it would be out, FSRI came out with their research, which was huge, like of like putting the firefighter rescue survey and that research together, and then saying like, this makes sense, like based off of what I know, right, what I've experienced, like all of this information is like confirming my bias right now. So that's kind of how it got started, man. And I didn't really expect it to take off. It was more for me than anything. And I was just really wanting to give it to my department at the time. And it just, people were like, we love this. We like the message, and I'm just one person, it's obviously not like because I say it has to be that way.
Right.
But it is refreshing to know that I wasn't the only one with that frustration, and that this still to this day was just like almost 6 years later resonates so well with so many people. And that really kind of like changes things for you, like you realize like, well, crap, if I felt this way and everybody else is feeling this way, we got a lot of work to do.
Okay. With how you had that notion, you did it pretty much like a deep dive. You did your research, you came up with a presentation. Your department was on board. So the saying, you're never a prophet in your own land. And what I mean by that is we have individuals out here in today's fire service that are trying to do good things, but their own home organizations, some people just aren't buying it. So, and th this is not a shot to any department, but the fact that your department listened to you and embraced it and was like, yes, let's get this change going. What advice would you give to somebody out there that maybe there's something that they know that their fire department isn't doing correctly? What would be the best way to do it? Because I know the approach of being brash, like for instance, you go to a conference, you come back and you're like, hey, we've been doing things wrong this whole time. I learned this, like that's not the way to do it. But what advice would you give to somebody?
Yeah, well, first I would start off by saying, like, when I started the Searchable Versus Survivable program, I was very fortunate that the chief that was in charge of the training center at the time, and the guys that were on the ladder truck and the squad, they allowed me to deliver my message, right? Like they sat there and I gave it to them first. Right, because their input was very important to me. Like these are people who have way more time on the job than I did, who have a lot of different experiences. So I wanted to make sure that like before I went and spoke to anybody else, that like speaking to those people that I highly respected, that they could tell me like yes or no, like yes, this is great, or I think you're missing the mark or something like that. So I started there. However, that is not everybody's experience. And to be honest, nothing against my department. I have great support from my administration to do things, and I help teach stuff at my department. But I want people to know that just because you have support from some doesn't mean that you're going to have support from everyone. Because in each organization that I'm talking about right now, like there was those people that backed me and supported it, and there's those people that like absolutely did everything they could to fight against it. What I had to wind up doing, and I'm not saying anyone has to do this, but I had to get it in my mind that, you know what, it's not about them. Like, I don't care what they think. If you want to support me and you want to have the conversation, great, but I don't need you to, right? Like, I'm still gonna be me. I'm still gonna be passionate. Like, I'm still gonna try and push what I believe in and stay true to my values, right? And have that integrity because I know what I signed up for when I came into this profession. And I know that my citizens was that I was serving, wherever that may be, expect that same level of professionalism and dedication. So I would say be prepared that not everything is gonna go how you want it to. Right. You might get shot down quite a bit, but it's your consistency, and it's how you choose to approach things. And your first go-to, we're human, is going to want to be like defeat and negativity, right? Don't allow yourself to go there. Stay positive, continue to make change. And you know what? You might have to do it like at a micro level. You might not even be able to do it with your own crew, right? Like they might not want to hear it. But I guarantee you there's somebody in that fire department that shares the same visions and values that you do. And have those conversations with that person and figure it out. And sometimes it's better to work in silence for a bit, like formulate a plan and then try to implement that plan. I am very fortunate now where my fire chief knows that search is my passion, and he utilizes that, right? He allows me to do things. I understand that that's not everybody's reality. So I guess the biggest thing, without getting on too much of a tangent, is there's no magic bullet. There's nothing I can say or show you of like, this is how. Just stay dedicated, right? And like fight for that change and understand that it might take a while. It might take half your career. Hell, you might be getting ready to retire before you see any of those changes. But steadily beating that drum, I think Rob Fisher says, what, 10% of pressure 100% of the time. That's gonna honestly take you the furthest. But don't be the person that like is the loudest in the room because you feel like you're the most educated. Like if you feel you got to do the research, right? And you gotta be able to physically prove things, because firemen, like, we're the worst. We question everything, everything. So it's like, if someone's like, well, that's great, how do you know, or what do you know? I say, well, I know that I went to a fire and I did this, and this is the outcome. And I know that upon my research, I found this, and this is what experimental data is showing us. This is what actual fire ground rescues that have been studied are showing us, which leads me to this conclusion. Like, it's kind of hard to fight against this. So I think at a certain point, you just gotta fight. You gotta pick and choose your battles, right? Like, and say, hey, but when you bring the battle to the forefront, make sure that you have a lot of information, because here's what I will encourage everybody. You and me are going to have a conversation, right? And you're going to tell me your opinions, and that's fine, but I'm going to tell you facts, and that's going to be the difference. And I feel like if you can prove something and you can show the facts, they may or may not change their opinion, but at least it's like solid foundation to be like, listen, man, I don't care if you believe me. I don't care if you like me, like, but this is the facts right here. So show me the facts of where you're correct and I'm wrong, and I'll gladly take a listen, right? Let's have that conversation instead of just blindly throwing things down. And I think where we fail is a lot of people just get, they get so like on the defense, because it, let's be honest, there's emotion attached to this, right? And they get on the defense, and because they get on the defense, it now becomes of, I'm right, you're wrong, and this is like friction. Don't even allow yourself to go there. That would be my I guess that would be my little bit of advice, if any of that made sense.
It definitely did. I mean, because you're right, firemen are. Firefighters are very passionate on certain things, and you know we hate change, and I totally get it. But it's also one of those things where, for some reason in today's society, we can't disagree to agree, but still be friends. Like we have this thing now where it's like, well, if you don't agree with me, I'm done with you. And it's like, bro, why are we even to this point? So.
It's sad, really, because like I don't know, like you would think that everybody wants to be on the same page, like everybody would want to be on a winning team, but you know, being a realist, like you got to understand that that's not everybody, unfortunately.
Definitely. Okay. Before I ask that question, I just want to pick your brain on it. The build your culture. It seems like, and I don't know, but it seems like Ann Arbor has that culture that you wanted, because you know you talked to your wife, you took a chance, and you've been there ever since. How can Pretty much what started that, before I ask that question?
What started my want to do build your culture? Is that your
Yes,
question?
yes.
Okay. So Pablo Jenner is a friend of mine. We were working at the same fire department, and you know, this didn't really have anything to do with our fire department we were at. This is just him and I talking, you know, observing. We're at Orlando Fire Conference. I think it was like 2019, And we were just sitting there talking and visibly frustrated as any passionate firefighter probably is, right? And we just were like, yeah, man, it's like building your culture, because we were talking about how we were so sick of seeing people complain about things but doing nothing to change it, right? And that was a common theme, that we've been seeing for a while. It's like, well, if you feel that strongly about it, what are you doing to fix it? What is your solution? And that's kind of where Paulo said, he's like, yeah, man, it's like you got to build your culture. And we looked at each other and we're like, that's it. Like, we had been teaching and doing things together, and we didn't really want it to start like a training group, if that made any sense. That's obviously eventually what it probably turned into, but we wanted to make like a statement. We wanted to make something that people could like really like attach themselves to. Because again, like, we're not the only ones that feel this way. And we didn't want it to be Sean. We didn't want it to be Pablo. We just wanted it to be like this all-encompassing, like, if you're a firefighter and you feel this way, like, this is what this is about. And so we just rolled out with Build Your Culture. And it's been good, but it's been bad. Not everybody sees it for what it is. Some people are like, oh yeah, what do you guys know? You're just a bunch of dudes that, want to make money, and that's not even it at all. It's just really about empowering people to do the right thing. And that's really what we wanted. And it's like, you can't always wait for your administration to make the moves. Sometimes you got to make the moves. And we just want to let people know that, hey, it's okay. Like, we understand you might be facing this thing, right? And this is what could create like a toxic environment or whatever, but like, let's motivate you to be better, to do better for your organization. Like, and that's really where that all kind of came together.
It's definitely noted. I know that it's starting to hit more and more for me. It's very easy to blame one person out of an entire organization where it's like, well, the culture sucks here. And when I mean that one person, everybody knows most of the time the fire chief gets the blame for it. But if you have, to me, as long as that chief is not like actually holding his thumb on you, like if he's busy, he or she's busy doing their thing, to me, the next group of individuals in line that can change the culture are the company officers. They have the most power, where if, yes, you might not agree with certain things your department's doing, but within the four walls of your fire station, you can block out that noise and turn station life around. But you get, to me, it's very easy to blame the fire chief, but the company officers they have a strong presence to change that too. They have that power in their position.
Oh, for sure. And like, it was told to me a while ago, and it's just like a statement that always kind of stuck with me, was like, changing minds requires changing hearts. And how do you do that? You do that through action, right? Somebody could throw darts at you all day long, like, oh, look, there that guy is in the gym again. All he does is work out. Yeah, but you know what? On the fire ground, when everybody else is exhausted and you're like, hey, give me another job, like, let's go. That shit stands out. Like, people recognize that. And like, what winds up happening is your performance outshines any negativity, right? And it's the same thing with culture, in my opinion. Like, you could come into the firehouse and you could partake in those negative conversations, right? And you could just like want to fit in with everybody else. But it takes true commitment, in my opinion, to sit there and be like, I'm not going to be like that. This is not right. And you know what? Like, if nobody else here is gonna do it, I'm gonna be the example. And I'm probably gonna become a target for it, which is okay. I'll somehow, like, manage that as it happens. But the bottom line is, nothing's gonna happen if everybody sits there waiting for everybody else to make a move. And I always say, like, if your company officer doesn't want to do it, that's the power of a senior man. And if you don't have a senior man in your position or in your department, or senior firefighter, I should say, in your department or on your crew, then maybe that's you. Maybe you need to start being that change agent. And I tell you, you asked earlier about like changing departments and doing things like that. Like, Maybe it's as simple as realizing, like, hey, this is not the shift for me. This is not the firehouse for me, right? Like, I guarantee you there's people within your organization that do share your same viewpoints. Finding those people and aligning yourself to be on the same shift or at the same firehouse or whatever, that I think is such an impactful thing when you're talking about trying to change the dynamics of how things are currently going.
I like it. Personal question. And like I feel free to not answer if you don't want to. With what you're doing, positively impacting the fire service, there's always haters. Have you felt your fair share of, oh, I felt the dart hit my back? Because people are like, who is this guy? Who does he think he is?
All the time, all the time. And like to this day I still get it. I get it within my own organization, and that's, I don't say that to be negative. I think, like I said, I think that's normal, right? I mean, people are going to do that. Again, like I used to let it bother me, and now I'm like, whatever, say whatever you want. Like, I don't care, because I know one thing to be true. Like, I'm doing the best that I can, not only to improve myself, but others around me. And that's more than those people that are throwing darts are doing, right? So at the end of the day, like, feel free to say whatever you want. I don't care. I do find it funny that nobody will ever say that to your face, though, right? Everybody says it behind your back. They spread those rumors or whatever. But like, when you walk into the room or you're around, very few people will actually say what's being said to you, right? Most people pretend like, oh, like whatever, and then you walk out and the chatter starts again. Block it out. It's just noise, right? Because while you guys are over there doing that, I'm gonna be working. Like, while you're being so negative, I'm gonna be trying to like create positive change. And that doesn't mean just in the fire service or the firehouse. I mean, that has everything to do with you too. Like, if you are around all that negativity and you allow it to affect you, you will become a negative person. And that carries over to your personal life. Guess what? That's not happening for me. I've been there before. It's not a pretty place to be, and I refuse to go back there. Like, whatever their problems are, that's their problem. I can't control that, right? But what I can control is, one, how I react to it, two, what I do with it. And I just like, hey man, like if you're talking about me and you're finding time to figure out everything that I'm doing, you're a fan. I don't care what you say. That means you're spending more time following me than you are doing anything else, whatever reason that is. Like, I laugh at, I find that comical. Like, there's people that will like listen to the podcast or whatever just to find ammunition or what. Great, because you know what? The joke's on you because you're fucking listening. So I don't know what to tell you. Like, you have this like obsession with this individual that you want to throw darts at, that in turn is forcing you to listen to what they have to say. That's a win. That's how I look at it. Sorry. And you know what? If you're trying to do anything worthwhile, you should have some people that are going to throw darts. Because I have to question if, like, if you don't have any adversity, why you're trying to like, trek a new path or whatever, then I have to question if it's, one, even worth doing, or two, if you're even on the right path. Right? Like, that's just me.
Right.
So
Right. Okay. Love the answer. Love it. Because I mean, it goes with anything. Whether you're like you, Sean Duffy, or the average firefighter that actually gives a damn. Anytime somebody tries to go against the norm, against the grain, the light shined. Like, who does this person think they are? And just know with that comes hate. But I love you. Love your advice on it. Opinion-based question, just for you only. What does the term aggressive mean to Sean Duffy?
oh man. So I knew you were going to ask this, which is funny because I ask it in a lot of my classes too, because I feel it's important. And you find that like somebody's definitions, like there's so many different things people think. For me, aggressiveness is about being smart and educated, right? It enables you to make the right choices when seconds count. I mean, that's really what it boils down to me. if we're going to go a step further, it's about putting yourself in a position to win. You know, like a lot of people mistake aggressiveness for recklessness, and that's not true. You know, I think those who act in the name of aggression with no plan or understanding of like what that means are the reckless people. But there's a lot of people that are very smart and they make educated decisions, right? So because of that, I think that's where you could find the true meaning of aggression is like it's very calculated, right? It's educated. People are intelligently making decisions, you know, and I don't know. I think the most dangerous part of the job that we face are the people that aren't educated and they have like zero aggression and they hide behind the whole like, well, that's too aggressive and that's too dangerous. And it's like, man, you know, that's what our job is. I hate to break it to you, but our job is all about taking risks in a calculated manner. So like maybe you're putting this label on this thing as a bad term because you're uncomfortable with it. How about you do a little soul search in here and figure out that you're probably not doing all the things you should to be aggressive, right? So yeah, that's just my take on it.
Okay. Another personal question, because I am very intrigued to hear your answer. You've been in the fire service now for 20 years. How long have you been on Ann Arbor for?
Oh, not long. So like 2.5 years maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't been there long. Hell, I'm sure there's people there that still don't even really know who I am. You know? But maybe they do. Who knows? You know, you never know what's being said about you, but yeah, it's great. I love working there. You know, I can tell you this. I went through a period of time in my career where like I really just truly did not enjoy going to work. I actually physically had anxiety about having to walk through those doors because of the culture that was in that organization. And I don't really feel that way about where I work now. I love going to work. My crew is awesome. You know, we laugh a lot, which is great. So I can't really complain too much now, which I think is a good thing.
Right. Do you have any aspirations to promote to like company officer at some point?
You know, I go back and forth, to be honest. Like some days I'm like, yes, I think I might. Other days I'm like, no. And here's why on both ends. Like I feel like if I promote to a company officer, maybe I could put myself in a position to really fight for some things that maybe I couldn't otherwise, right? Like I'm not in these officers' meetings or anything like that. So like, you know, you don't really know what's being discussed there, but being in that position, you're able to bring a couple things or more things, I should say, to the forefront and just kind of put it out there. And I also think that you know, having your own crew, you could set the tone, right? Like if I'm at firehouse, you know, four and I'm the lieutenant and we work out every day as a crew and that's my expectation and we throw ladders and we train and that's my expectation, people are gonna know that. Like, hey, if you want to come to fours on this shift, understand like Duffy's gonna make you do some stuff. And that's not because like of an ego thing. It's because like I want my crew, right? Even as a backseat firefighter, I still have this mindset. I want my crew to be the go-to. Like I want to show up to an incident and someone be like, oh, four is here. Like we got it. Like get those guys to work. And I want to set that standard. So if I was a company officer, that would be the standard set. Like don't come to four on this shift if you don't want to train or if you don't want to, you know, like work out or you don't take this job seriously. Like we're gonna have fun, but we're also gonna make sure that we're dialed in the process. With that being said, I also feel there's value in a senior firefighter position and that when people promote too quickly, there's really nobody there for that position. And that makes a company officer's job pretty tough sometimes. So I think like I go through that balance of like, man, like right now I really want to ride this firefighter position out because I feel like I could really do some good here. So I don't have a definite answer for you. It is on the radar at probably some point in my career, but it's not something that I'm like, oh, I have to get this done in the next 5 years. Like, I'll get there when I'm ready to get there, and I feel like it's a good time. But in the process, man, I think like my focus is, what can I do at the level I'm in? What change can I impact? How can I set others up for success? You know, where, and that's really where my mind is at. And not that I know everything, because I certainly don't, but I love working with newer people that are coming in. I know it sounds weird saying, because I have 2.5 years on in that department, right? But like, we just hired three. I love to pick their brain, see where they're at, and just give them some of my failures. Say, hey, man, it's not a good idea. I did that. This is how it worked out. And just kind of encourage them, because everybody's got their own career path, you know, and with all the good people start promoting, which is not a bad thing. That's a great thing. But you want to also make sure that the people underneath you that are next in line are carrying that torch. And you've got to set a foundation for that first. Otherwise, it's never going to happen.
Now, granted, you've been on Ann Arbor for 2.5 years, but to me, you're short on tenure, but you're not short in your actual years of service. And I know that can be a different topic. You can have somebody that's been on for 25 years and they do the same stupid things every day. But I think as long as the individual has the knowledge, shows the work, like, hey, when I'm here, I'm here, I'm present, that does play a factor.
Yeah, for sure. And like I say this all the time, just because you were qualified for the job, you know, 15 years ago doesn't mean you're qualified today. Like, this is a constant thing that takes work. And, you know, like, unfortunately, and I'm not saying this about my organization directly, I'm just saying this as the fire service as a whole. I see this really bad trend of like, what the fuck do you know? You haven't been long, here long enough to have an opinion, or you might go into a department with experience from somewhere else, and they say your experience doesn't mean shit to us. Like, and those are all like things I think that people who are threatened say to like push things down, because you know, like there's some really smart people in this industry, and for whatever reason they make changes, and I think that scares some people of like, oh shit, like I'm comfortable, you know, doing what I do, and this is all I know, and now I have this person that could possibly shake my world up, right? That should be embraced. Like, I just said this the other day in a conversation. Like, if you don't want to be the one to do it, like if you're that person that just checked out and you have people working with you that are engaged, that is a blessing. Like, let them do them, right? Like, nobody's forcing you to do anything, but the fact of you like fighting against it or trying to somehow discredit them because in your mind, even though you've probably never talked to them or you don't really even know them, they don't know anything. They're not qualified to do anything. Their experience doesn't matter because it didn't come from your department.
Right.
That's a cancer. That is a cancer. And if other people that are coming into the organization at a young age, right? Maybe they haven't worked anywhere before, or this, you know, like they're still young and impressionable. They're going to come in and they're going to absorb that mentality and they're going to reflect that mentality back to you or the other people, right? And it's just going to be this vicious cycle, you know, of the same attitude. And we're well past that. Like, that kind of attitude needs to die. Like, when the dinosaurs of the fire service leave, that mentality needs to die with it. Like, that's how I feel. And those are one of those things that like I'm not going to shy away from my opinion on because it's hurting us.
No, I mean, you're right. It's that thing of, well, this is how it's always been, or this is how I was taught. So to the next person in line, this is what I'm teaching you. It's like you said, it's that. And firemen can be, in my experience, firemen can be a blessing when it comes to, hey, I need help. This person needs help with this. Like, we are very quick to step in and lead when we have a brother or sister that's hurting or in need. Hey, we're gonna work their shifts. But then on the flip side, man, we can eat each other up, and it's like, why are we like this?
Yeah, and it's really shameful that you allow yourself to use the terminology of like brotherhood or sisterhood, and then you behave like that. Like that's just not the way it is. And I find it interesting. Like some people in the fire service, like every time I hear this, it makes me cringe. Like they're like, oh, it's not a brotherhood or sisterhood. It's a step brotherhood or step sisterhood. I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, so like I have a step brother and a step sister. I treat them the same way that I treat my blood brother and my blood sister. Like just because they came into my family at a later date doesn't mean that they're have any less value, right? But this idea that like it's okay to talk shit about each other, it's okay to treat people like crap, and like we hide behind this like these games of like, oh, well, you got to earn your respect, or you got to earn your stripes, or seniority sucks until you have it. Like, you know, just shit on the new people and, until they have enough seniority. Then, like, it's like, who the fuck are you to dictate how somebody's career should go? You're no one. Who are you to dictate when they're ready to have an opinion? When they have enough experience in your mind to do something, like, no, you're not. You know, like that's not up for you to dictate. So those are the things that I think drive people out of organizations because they get tired of hearing it. You know, like I'll tell you, I'm 38 years old. I'm a grown ass man. I'm not gonna walk in and be utterly like disrespected just because it's par for the course. Like that's just not gonna happen, right? Like we could be professional. Yes, I get earning your respect. I get like not being entitled to anything, 100%. But that doesn't mean you have to be a dick to people.
That's a fact. That's a fact. And I know you mentioned it, but I truly believe this is what it is. I think it's either A, they're threatened, B, they will feel like they are no longer the smartest person in the room, and just for afterthought, you're never the smartest in the room. There's always going to be somebody that has an experience or has knowledge that you don't know. And so you need to, and I know you know this because you go around and teach all over the country. So I'm sure you've met an individual that maybe one-on-one privately has gone and stated something that gets you to think like, shit, like that's yeah, you know what I mean? Like I think we need to realize that firemen want to be the end all be all. We want to be the best of the best. But at least for me in my mind, I always know, hey, there's somebody out here that's bigger than me, stronger than me, and smarter than me. And I can't feel threatened by it. I need to just kind of know my place, know my role, and just I think if we can always kind of keep that in the back of our head, the service is getting better. But I think as far as eating our own young, I think that mentality would go away if we had more people that did that.
Yeah, and you want to know what the sad part is about that is there are people that I work with or have worked with that I find to be very smart. Like, man, these people know some stuff, but they're such assholes that I won't even ask them. I don't even want to be around them. Like, which is a shame because they have that knowledge to pass on, right? And it's like, man, if you would just sit down with me and have a conversation, like you have zero, you have no idea how much you could probably impact my career, but I will refuse to do that because of your behavior. Like you, that ego will that eats people up. Like, it's like, look, man, I got no interest in you, which is a shame
It is.
because like you're gonna leave in a couple years or whenever that is, and you're gonna take all that experience and knowledge with you. And the only people that are going to get to hear are the people that are assholes just like you, if they choose to hear it, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, you got people that are like, man, tell me about it. Like, I want to know what you know because it's going to make me better. And I want you to train me on like what you know. And I want to have these conversations. And they're robbing you because they'll never give it to you because they're stuck up here in their own mind. And they're just so hell-bent on being against you instead of working with you. And like that is an attitude that I never understood. Like, why would you want to be that person?
Yeah. And you make me feel a lot better by you saying like you don't even want to be around them because that's how I am. And then I get some people to be like, well, you know, maybe you should try, or why are you always here and others are here? And it's like because the fire service kind of reminds me of high school. You know, you got those cliques, the popular kids. I don't care to be that. Like, yes, the ego is another thing I think that drives the service apart. Like, you feel like you're a part of a certain apparatus or a certain group of individuals that makes you above everyone else. And it's like, that's at the end of the day, the fire service, the fire ground is team-based. It's teamwork. It's not I. Now, granted, you can have one person that's carrying that crew, but they can only do that to a certain extent.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, again, I just had this conversation the other day. It was like, you're sitting there, oh, how come you don't really talk? It's like, you just don't know me. Like, I'll talk your ear off, man, especially if it's about something I'm interested in, like, and you're interested in. Like, we have conversation all day. But the reason I'm not talking is because I don't want to partake in this conversation that has no benefit to me, right? Has no benefit to our organization, right? It's so bitter, and like, I don't want to be a part of it. So I'm going to be over here, right? And I'm not going to allow that attitude to reflect onto me and like affect me. And I'm just going to do my thing. Now, does that mean that I'm not going to talk to you when we're on calls or stuff? No, I'll talk to you. I'll keep it professional, right? But at this point, like, it's better for me to distance myself from you because we're obviously not the same and we're not going to see eye to eye. And I'm going to do the things that I know benefit me mentally and physically. And that's what I'm going to do. And you're more than welcome to join me if you'd like to. And I'm not going to force you. But at the end of the day, that's the difference between like the brotherhood and sisterhood or just a coworker, right? Like, I'm going to come in for this shift and we might not speak all but three words to each other. And I'm fine with that, to be honest. It used to be awkward, but I'm fine with it now because you know what I have? I have my peace. I have my peace of mind and everything else with it. And it doesn't stress me out. I could care less if you talk to me or not, because I got way more important stuff to do than sit around and bullshit all day. And I can do that. And I would love to spend time with you. And I'm more than happy to, but this is a two-way street, right? Like, you're not sucking me into your negativity, and we're just not going to do that. And I think that's the difference between like reaching a certain maturity level in our profession and realizing like, I don't have to be like you and you don't have to be like me. I can respect you for who you are, but damn, man, like, you are not forcing me to be the same person you are. Unless it has some benefit, right? And it's going to make us both better. Can't do it because I'm not going to carry that around all day. And then come home and take it out on my wife and kids that I had such a crappy day, and it's just not worth it, right? Like, you do you, I'll do me. It's not personal. And that's a hard thing for people to understand, is like, oh, well, you isolate yourself. No, you isolated yourself. That's the difference, right? I'm not doing anything other than making sure that at the end of the day, like, my values aren't being compromised. That's it.
Love it. Love it, because I can so relate to it. Awesome. Just your opinion only. What do you think, or what do you see the fire service is doing good on or can improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
Well, that's a great question. I think, departments are starting to do a really great job of saying, this is why you should work here. And they're promoting the job, right? We're aggressive. We have this kind of culture. Like, you can do this, like, all those things that are going to attract like firefighters who truly are into the job. What I think it could be better with recruitment and retention is stop telling people no, right? Like, obviously, there might be some times that you got to, but like, stop telling people no when they have an idea just because you don't want to hear it. Right? Or saying stupid stuff like, other, we can't do that. There's no possible way. Like, you're just so dismissive, right? Understand and appreciate the initiative that people take. So, like, when they come to you as an administrative person or like a company officer or somebody, and they say, hey, I put together this proposal, or I put together this policy, or I put together this training, whatever it is, like, do you think we can do it? Instead of saying thanks, and like letting it lay dormant or no or whatever, be like, yeah, I'll take a look at it. It might be something we can do. If not, I'll tell you what, why don't we together figure out what we can do, right? Again, empower your people. I think we do a really bad job at getting the right people in the door initially because we advertise more about the benefits of our job than we do the job itself. So it's no surprise to me when you have somebody come in and you're having a problem with them because what they saw on your recruitment flyer was, oh, I only have to work X amount of days a year. I get this much money. These are my benefits. Like, holy crap. Like, this is awesome. And they don't really take the time, like, to understand all the other expectations. So, yeah, I think we need to do that. I think we need to do a better job of physical fitness standards. Like, you got to take a physical fitness test to get in this department, and you got to take one while you're here, like, consistently. And that's not saying that if you're not meeting the standard, like you're fired. It's just saying like, hey, let us help you get better, right? Like there's going to be an improvement plan for you because what we do is serious and it matters. And like, you know, the idea of like, oh, I came into the fire service 15 years ago. I was 120 pounds, just like you. And now I'm 300. Well, if you don't care about yourself, you probably don't care about me either, which means that I've got to worry. I've got to do some worrying here. So, you know, that's probably an unpopular opinion, and I'm not trying to shame anybody, but yeah, like
This is reality.
it is reality, you know, and I just think that we could do a better job with recruitment intention retention in that aspect of getting the right people in initially, making sure they stay by making them feel valued, but also like, hey, you want retention? Make a standard that you know that the people that want to be here are going to meet, and the people that don't want to be here are going to leave. Right? Then you'll be left with a department full of people that you want that's going to carry your organization to the next step versus people that are going to fight against you the whole way to bring you 10 steps backwards.
And I wish departments would do that and organizations, but I think it's because we have individuals where, you know, the fire service is not so much sought out now. It's kind of like we need bodies in seats and we don't care where we get them. Some organization, I'm not saying all, but it seems to be a popular thing of like, hey, we're riding short, where there are mandos being forced, overtime that's implemented. But I think if we truly, because to me, a firefighter that actually loves a job, that loves coming into work, doing what they do, that's your recruitment right there. Because they'll tell other firemen that they meet, hey, this place, come work for us. Like, it's everything it needs to be.
Yeah, and like so, like, well, you'll hear me talk about a lot when it's come to this, like, culture stuff, which I think translates over into recruitment and retention. Three P's: people, purpose, performance. That's it. Hire the right people, give them purpose, and the performance is just going to go through the roof. Like, that is going to happen, you know. And I understand the whole, hey, we need to fill seats thing, but if the majority of your fire department fits inside of those three P's, and they want to be there and they're motivated, you've empowered them, they feel like they have purpose within your organization, they are going to be the voice of your organization, like you said. They're also going to be the ones in the organization that are going to pull the weaker ones aside and say, hey man, listen, how can I help you? Granted, you're going to have people in that process that probably slip through the cracks and stay, even though they don't belong. You're going to have people in that process that are going to leave. But the idea is that you're cultivating a welcoming environment, not a I'm better than you. It's let's get better together. Right. And that's going to be reflected. And like your morale is going to go through the roof. People are going to start, like you mentioned, like when it talks about, hey, we're hiring, like look at the people that post that they're hiring, like, hey, we're hiring, come work for us, whatever. And see the joy in their face. Or like you hear it in their voice when they're talking about their organization. Like, that's what we should strive for. If your people aren't promoting your organization, we got a problem. There's a problem there. We got to figure out what that is so we can fix it. Because if you don't think that the people that currently work for you are your biggest recruitment and retention tools, you're wrong. That 100%, it doesn't matter what you put on paper. Those are going to be people that are going to make people want to stay. We're going to drive people out of your organization. So they matter. right?
Facts. That's facts. Kind of an off-the-wall topic, but you mentioned it because I keep seeing, like, granted, social media, but the comments go back and forth, like, oh, there's no need for this, and my department has it. You mentioned that you have three engines, two ladders, but your ladders are quints. Mine are also quints, okay? And you have this debate where, oh, the quint is a terrible thing and all this other, but to me, my opinion only, I think it had if it meets the needs and basis of the department and the area, then it works. Like, why is there judgment on it? I don't know why we like to, you know, like, oh, well, it needs to be a true truck company, or a truck's being built and it has a pump, and it's like, oh, it's not. You know what I mean? Like, why? What's your take on it with your department having a quint? Because my department also has 2 points.
So, being someone that loves truck work, I also understand what the community expects of us. And the fact is, our citizens, like, if you're first in and that thing's got a ladder on the top of it, and you're not stretching line and flowing water, and your next due is several minutes away, they're wondering why you're not putting their fire out, right? Like, let's just get to the conclusion that, like, you could send 57 truck companies, like true truck companies, to a working structure fire. The fire's not going to go out without putting water on it.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's fact. We can open it up all we want and we can burn it to the ground. Sure, we can do that. We can make searches happen all day long. We have forest doors. We do whatever that fits in your traditional truck company work. But water is the equalizer on the fire ground. It truly is. Like, you have to put the line between victims and the fire. Like, that's our objective. So I could say it works for us because there's spots in our city like Ladder 5. I tell you, if they get a working fire in their first due, depending on where they're at, they're going to be there by themselves for quite some time. If they didn't have a pump on there and they didn't have the ability to get their own water supply and do these things, like, after a little bit, like, why are they even there? Right? Because you delayed all the things that need to happen until you're waiting on an engine. So I think people need to look at it that way. And I understand the frustration because, let's be honest, when everything in your department operates like an engine, the truck culture seems to get neglected.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. And that's the problem. It has nothing to do with that because there's, guess what? There's fire departments that don't even have a truck company. And they just send nothing but engines to their fires, and they have to do truck work off an engine. So, like, I wish we could just get away from what's on the top of the rig and understand, like, hey, let's just be good firefighters, right? Like, if I'm there first, I need to stretch a line. It doesn't matter where it comes off of. Like, just get water flowing on that fire and understand arrival orders of, like, what needs to happen next. Like, when is search happening? Like, I don't care that a truck company or a quint shows up first, and traditionally, like, that's your search and rescue company. Who cares? Have the second unit go do search, whether that's an engine or another quint or truck. It doesn't matter. What matters is that the fire ground functions are taking place that need to happen, and they're happening in a timely manner, right? The negative aspect is when the truck work gets neglected and people are like, oh, what do you mean? I have to throw a ladder. Well, I got to get on this roof and cut a hole. I've never done that. Because the mindset is like, we're not going to, despite what's on there. That's the problem. So I think as long as you balance it out and you, like, those people who ride engines are squared away in truck company functions, and the people that ride ladders or quints are squared away in engine company functions and truck company functions too, like, it's not going to matter for you, right? Like, you're going to do all the things they need to do. So yeah, that's my personal take on it.
Love it. Can't argue it. Love hearing it because it's all facts. Outside training. Are you a proponent? I'm sure you are, but I just wanted to ask you.
I am, because I think in the fire service we need to do a better job of challenging the norm. We need to also challenge our beliefs, right? Like, why do I feel this way? And sometimes, like, putting outside training against what you currently know is going to either prove or disprove things for you, right? So, like, basement fires being a great example. Oh no, just scoot down the stairs as fast as you can, then open up the nozzle. Like, that's a mindset out there. And I'm not gonna, like, pick sides, But what I'm going to say is, like, when you go to outside training and you learn how to flow and move, right? And you learn how to flow and move up and down stairs, and you learn how to really like utilize the stream reach and seal off compartments and get gas contraction and all these things, and you start understanding fire dynamics and how things work, you're able to prove why that's not such a good idea to just race down the stairs and then wait to open up the nozzle, right? Like it, love it, whatever, or hate it, doesn't matter. The fact is, having the ability to come to the table and say, well, this is what I was taught. Here's the facts. This is what we currently do. Somewhere in between, like, we're going to have to figure out, like, are we just going to operate the same way? Or are we going to change up things? Because if we're professionals and we want to constantly get better, it's worth looking at other options. And that's not saying everything's going to work for you. And it's certainly not saying that you should go to outside training and come back to your fire department and say, we're doing it all wrong. We've got to change everything. But at least having an understanding of where these things are coming from, these tactics are coming from, and truly studying them. Hell, maybe you try it, right? Maybe somebody goes and they find out how to do a new hose load and you trial it. You keep one of your hose loads the same as it always is and one that's different, so that you can let people pick what they want and then get a general consensus on what works best. And what you might find is that they both work equally, but on different situations, right? You're not going to know that unless you give yourself the opportunity to prove or disprove things. So yes, outside training should be a must. We tend to bastardize ourselves, like indoctrinate people, like when they come in and like, well, this is the way we've always done it, so we're going to continue to do it. Or we take a small part of something, and that's the bastardized part, right? We take the small part of something, we don't truly understand it, and then we try and implement it and then defend it based off of like a large gap of information, you know. So if you care about your organization and you care about the citizens that you are protecting, you should support outside training and at least evaluate the concepts of what's being brought back to you.
And last question for you, I always like to part out with it. And this is, I always have to kind of interject and disclaimer, this is not a boast or a brag on the person I'm talking to. Where would you like to see yourself leave the fire service before you retire? Like, to me, everyone has aspirations and goals. It's to some that might be crazy, but everybody has something that a purpose that they want to do in life. So where would you like to see yourself before you hang it up?
Probably in training, honestly. And that's not saying that I know enough to take that spot. That's not what I'm saying at all. But having, to me, having a person who cares about training and understands the value and is like connected to the fire service and under like knows what's out there and can enable other people to do things. You don't have to know everything. Like, I guess a perfect example would be like, hey, if you've never ridden a true truck company and you've never done those functions, but you're in a training role, you owe it to the organization to bring people in or send your own people to classes to learn those things, bring it back to you, have that conversation, and then say, okay, what would you like to do with this? Let's figure this out together, right? That's why I think the training role is so important. I think, to be honest, if your department has a training division, that is the backbone of your fire department. That's where everything starts. That's where your culture starts. That's where like how you operate starts, like all of it. It all starts with the training division. And if you have like a true training division where people like are recruits and they come through and they enter into that program before they hit the street, those are the first people that those recruits are going to see, right? And it's very impressionable. And that is such a pivotal part of our organizations, and it gets overlooked. So that's where my passion is. Like I'm never going to know everything. I can learn a shit ton from the people I work with, for sure. But I think if I was going to make the largest impact that I possibly could in my organization with the time that I have there, it would be in that position.
Okay. With that being said, Sean, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to definitely spread the gospel, spread the positivity of the fire service. Everyone knows Sean Duffy. If you mention Sean Duffy, most people know that name. So, I mean, I just want to say continue doing what you're doing. I mean, I don't need to give you that validation. I think the fire service has shown that what you're doing is providing benefits. So I just want to say, man, thank you for accepting the invite, reading the message, and coming on and booking this episode.
Well, first, I want to say thank you for inviting me. Like we talked before, we've been on like we met in North Carolina a few years back, and you said you wanted to start this thing, and you're just doing amazing stuff with it. And you are also reaching people and changing their perspective on jobs and stuff, whether you realize it or not. You know, like what you're doing is definitely reaching a lot of people. So continue that. Honored to be considered a guest on your show. So thank you for the invite.
No, awesome. Awesome words. I really appreciate it. I try to stay humble. I don't want this to, what I try to do, always make sure I try to do is I don't let the podcast interfere with when I'm actually on shift. Like when I'm on shift, I'm on shift, I'm dialed in, I'm focused, I'm putting in the work that I'm talking about. It's not just talk. Anybody that works with me will tell you, like, proof is in the pudding. Like your success matters, your last name matters. I look forward to seeing you next month at Carolina Fire Days for the hot class. I can't wait to learn some things that I don't know, and it's okay to say that. Like you just mentioned, you can't know it all in this because we say yes to everything, and it's impossible. Because to me, the more you keep saying yes, the more the vital skills of like search and life safety and care, EMT type skills, it gets lost or it gets weakened as time goes on. So I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. I'm looking forward to it as well. I mean, you guys are gonna teach me just as much stuff. I'm almost certain. I learned so much from traveling and just kind of like listening to everybody. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully we'll have a good couple days.
Yes, definitely. All right. Appreciate it, sir. If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.